coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Monday, 18th day of April, 2022. Last day to file your taxes if you're an individual, to be in time unless you got an extension. What are we paying taxes for anyway? That's my question. I'm sure y'all look at the situation and ask the same question. With me today is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. The guy is such a professional. Let me tell you something. The guy, The Liberty Man, has a radio show, of course, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 3 hours a day. He's such a professional. He is a great homicide detective. I respect the man immensely for his work in that venue. I respect his analysis of current events, and I would urge everyone to bookmark thelibertyman.com. Go there. And there's a front page. If you're watching this, there is his front page. It's him on his Vespa. And I'm kidding. But there he is there. And if you scroll down, you'll find a link to his current radio show. And you drill down on that, and you can find the archives. And, of course, his website is full of news, topical matters, of course, that we are so inclined to be looking at today. But I don't want to get distracted. I don't like distractions from the most important things. John, thanks for your patience and thanks for your flexibility and for being here tonight. How are you today, sir?
Good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to start off with this because. What? Don't I look good? Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. I asked Eric, don't I look good? I'm wearing a tie that was sent in by a viewer, and this is a coffee tie, okay? I wore this yesterday for Easter, and for reasons I won't get into, my wife said, you got to wear it today. So anyway, how are you? And what are you looking at? Good, Doc. What are you looking at today? On this 18th day of April, what are you looking at that's not a distraction we should be faced, we should be looking at as Americans, as people of the West, and as conservative Christians all across the world?
Well, there's a lot of distractions and a lot of rabbit trails people can go down, Doug. For most Americans, most of the time, and most people worldwide, most of the time, two things, food and fuel. Food for everybody, fuel for most. In my neighborhood, fuel is approaching $4 a gallon, where 2 years ago it was $1.25. Food is becoming more expensive with each passing week, it seems like. Food independence is not an easy thing. It takes, if you decide to take a plot of ground to have a garden to feed your family, you're looking at about 3 years before you'll be successfully feeding your family, even maybe half to three quarters of its needs. That's a long time, obviously. So with all the distractions of what's going on with the war in Ukraine, the COVID and the vaccine and all those related matters, what's going on with the economy, I think we need to be focusing a lot on food, Doug, and talking about the very basics of what people can do to get by, which when it comes, the basic as it gets is rice and beans. Much of the world, right, the third world anyway, already survives on rice and beans, which provides all vitamins, minerals, essential amino acids, and so forth, protein, except vitamin C. So that's an inexpensive way to stock up on what you need. Would it be boring? Yes. There's probably ways to make it more tasty, and I'm sure, I have no doubt, there's ways to make rice and beans more tasty, but it will keep you alive. And that's where we're headed, Doug, I think, really quick, is people supplementing their normal diet with rice and beans to stretch the budget, to fill up the empty bellies, to give people the energy they need to do the work they need to do. So I think, Doug, it might be worthwhile for us to focus this show on Monday, the 18th day of April, on food. I think that'd be a good idea, Doug.
Then let's do that. Let's do that, because I saw a graph, and if I can, or no, not a graph, a this was on Saturday. Well, first of all, let me lead off with this. This was on Twitter. It was posted 6 days ago. And this is about inflation spikes. Obviously, the current CPI, the current numbers, when they calculate inflation, they don't use certain numbers. One thing I'm not seeing on here is the wide range of food, okay? The blanket food, things you eat. Now, there's chicken, there's milk, there's fish and eggs on there, and coffee and such. Okay, I get all that. But what we're seeing here, I think, or we will be seeing, John, is the fact that we are not going to have the selection or even the ability. I believe that we're not going to see beef on the shelves by the end of the year. Or if we do, it's going to be so overpriced that you're not going to be able to grab it. And that brings me to this question. Okay, out in Missouri, I spoke with someone that we both know who said, you know what? Let's see, how can I put this? They've often purchased every year, like a quarter of a cow or half a cow.
Right.
And, they went to three farmers. It's unavailable in Missouri. It's unavailable. So with all that said, and the graph or the picture, the image I was going to show you was from Skyglass about the ships that are all off of Singapore or Shanghai's off of mainland China, but near Shanghai, near the ports. They're just sitting there. Thousands of ships are just sitting there, which is going to impact the supply chain from now right through the next years, really. So all of this combined, John, and you're right, it does come down to food, doesn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, whether you got a family of six or whether you're home alone listening to this, it all comes down to sustaining ourselves. Because we're not going to put that slop that they pretend is meat into our bodies. So, okay. So, yeah, I guess that is perhaps the most important thing. And I'm going to just do this. If you don't mind, there's a 45-second clip, Eric, the tech. This is from 2004. They've had the jump on us, except for you and other people in the business. They've had the jump on us. But the infiltration into our governments, whether it be our Senate, our Congress, our executive branches, our cabinet branches or the cabinets, the infiltration to advance their agenda for you to eat bugs and for us to eat nothing was really laid out a long time ago. But this is from 2004. I just want to play this for you, and then we can continue. You can continue talking about this, because this to me is so important. Look, the infiltration, the people who are doing this to us are already in place. They're already in play. They already have their positions. We know this. We've named a lot of them. But think about this from a perspective of, 18 years ago. Can we play that 40-some second clip? Okay, here it goes.
I would use this prize money to create a new community inside the World Economic Forum. A community of young leaders, of personalities between 25 and 40 years old, who are already in leadership positions. So we will create, in the course of this year, with the seed money coming from the prize, this group, this community of 1,111 new global leaders, and of course, we will make sure that we have a strong component inside this group coming here from this region.
All right. That was from his acceptance to an award back in 2004 where he received $1 million, and that was seed money for 1,111 infiltrators into Western governments. I don't know what the magic is in 11-11.
And that was Klaus Schwab.
And that was Klaus Schwab. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if you said that.
No, probably not. But you did. I appreciate that. So John, I mean, they've had to jump on us now for a good number of decades, and that's just from 18 years ago. And so the people to implement the plan that you're talking about to starve us and to kill us ultimately, they're already in place. And by the way, let me mention this real quick. Schwab has been married since 1971 to a woman by the name of Hilda. And they live in Switzerland. They've got two adult children, Nicole, who's a co-founder of the Gender Equality Project. And that was in 2009. And Oliver Schwab, who is married to a Chinese woman and heads the WEF office in Beijing, just as a side note. So that sets the stage for what we're talking about. I'm going to turn it back to you and just enlighten us on what we need to do and what how we can fight these communists.
Well, Doug, there's not much our listeners can do. We have a few exceptions, obviously, but there's not much our individual listeners can do. A rather famous politician back east, if I can paraphrase what he said pretty closely, all politics is local. The power of the Democratic Party, the power of the Republican Party, it comes from the county level. There's more than 3,000 counties in the United States. I've said this before, and we've had, I know you and I have had some success with this, Doug, that get active in local politics. Many of these seats, these positions go unchallenged. School board positions where there's one candidate for one position instead of two. Local city elections for the at the city level where positions go unchallenged, where one person runs for the office and nobody else even bothers to sign up. So you can have a great impact at the local level, running for the board of aldermen, mayor, the school boards, become active in your local Republican Party, the Central Committee. Most counties will have a Republican Central Committee with committee men and committee women from their various townships. Those are things that our listeners can do, Doug, to get active locally, to have an impact at the county level, eventually at the state level, and then at the national level. That's what's happened these past decades. You mentioned decades. These school boards were infiltrated and taken over by leftist communists over the decades, merely because the conservatives weren't concerned. They weren't signing up for these offices. They were paying attention to their families, their careers, their church, whatever it might be. But they weren't paying attention to very important matters, the board of aldermen, mayors, school boards, committeemen, and all those various things that people can run for office, run for state rep, run for state senator. So I'm going to encourage people to do that. We don't know how quickly or how fast we can turn things around, but Doug, we got no choice. I'd much rather do this at the ballot box than have to use a bullet box, which I've done both. And I know the consequences of making change with the bullet box. I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, as they say.
And so, you know, that's important for people to know your history. And I know people, we have regular listeners, and we have people that are new to this show. Your history is one of, you've got a military intelligence, a military background. You've got investigative background. You've got, it's a pretty diverse background. So you've been there. You've actually done that. And as you say, you've got the T-shirt. So you know of that of which you speak. So, okay. But having said that, one of the areas, and you didn't mention this, and I want to mention this, in my area right now, we have positioned people as poll watchers and poll workers. You know, you want to change the results of previous election or the cheating? Well, I can tell you right now that there's a need as well for areas for poll watchers and poll workers. The latter, of course, more important than the former. They've got more authority. So that too, add that to your list, John. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, once again, in my local polling place at the Davisville American Legion Hall, where I am the commander, that's our local polling place for Davisville, Missouri. We've had issues getting enough poll workers. We've never had a poll watcher that I'm aware of. That would be great to have people volunteer to be a poll watcher, but which is a voluntary position. The poll workers are actually paid to be there.
Right.
But we've had issues just getting enough people to volunteer to be a paid poll worker. And I'm sure that we're not alone. Out of 3,300 counties, there's probably many jurisdictions where they have issues getting enough people to volunteer for one day of their life to be paid to be a poll worker, possibly volunteer to be an unpaid poll watcher. Both positions are incredibly critical. So our republic, this is not a democracy. We have a republic. The founding fathers were very aware of the consequences of establishing a democracy because they were students of history. There had been multiple attempts at democracy before 1776. Everyone ended in failure, without exception. They all ended in failure. So the founding fathers knew we have to establish a republic, not a democracy. What happens in a democracy is over a period of time, and it varies from place to place, the citizens learn how to gain access to the public treasury. And once the citizens learn how to do that, that's the end. They vote themselves money, and that's what's been happening in this country for decades, is the constituents putting pressure on the elected representatives to take money out of the public treasury and provide it to the citizens.
Yep.
It's kind of a side note, Doug, and we're kind of deviating away from the main topic of food.
You go back. You go back to what you wanted to talk about, because this is important, all of this, the background especially. But go ahead. Continue with the – let's move forward with this, from this.
Well, out here in the country, the people I associate with, who many of them are preppers, they're established in their gardens, getting their seedlings ready to go, spraying water on the fruit trees at night so that hopefully the blossoms won't freeze. That's a way to retard the freezing situation. Getting chickens, my friend Leon Green is with me every Tuesday. He has recently took the delivery of 80 chicks, and he's diligently working to make sure they're safe and healthy. I'm looking to get a chicken coop myself. So I can have my own chickens, and I'll have a safe and healthy environment for them to thrive and produce eggs. I had one of my rancher friends, they referred to chickens as the farm animals for city people. They're small. If you don't have roosters, they don't make any noise. And they're fairly easy to take care of. They're a simple animal. And well, a lot of city people do have chickens for that reason. But that's a way to get started, to have a source of fresh eggs, a source of fresh chicken meat, is to keep some chickens. It's simple, not terribly expensive, but there's some minor expense involved. You can grow vegetables and fruits even with an apartment, either a window box or on a balcony, a small porch if you got a porch, in 5-gallon buckets. There's ways people can get started with food production at home. There's no excuse for not doing that, Doug. There really isn't. Are you going to grow enough to feed yourself? Well, obviously not. But you're getting your hands in the dirt. My wife, Dr. Moore, had an undergraduate degree in horticulture, and she loved working on the plants. She would sing to the tomatoes. And you need to learn to get your hands in the dirt. There's no substitute for that, Doug. There are a lot to learn from books and from YouTube videos, but there is no substitute for getting your hands in the dirt, growing the seedlings, transplanting them into the bigger pots of dirt or outside, depending on what your situation, and watching these plants grow and protecting them from insects and animals, and all the things that go into a garden for fresh vegetables, herbs, fruits, and so forth. A lot of critters look at your garden as a smorgasbord. The deer, the birds, other critters. And it's a learning process, Doug. People, unless they start now in April of 2022, they're going to be hopelessly lost a year or two from now when they've got no choice. When the food at the supermarket is too expensive to buy, or it's just simply not available. That's where this is going, Doug. And whatever family member does the family grocery shopping, they're noticing right now the dramatic increases in the price of food. That sometimes the shelves are bare of a particular, especially processed foods that are on the shelves in the middle of the store. They're noticing some bare spots or where they got the product lined up side by side instead of stacked one behind the other to make it give the appearance that there's more food there than there really is.
Exactly.
Doug, you know, it's, but on one hand, but I still have hope. Our mutual friend, Mike Adams, he recently interviewed David Woodcock, Wilcock, David Wilcock, get the name right, John, Wilcock, very bright fellow. And Wilcock, just like myself, just like you, just like Mike Adams and our friend Steve Quayle, he's got his foot in preparedness and he's got his foot in a hopeful future. And that's what I do, Doug. I prepare for the worst and I hope for the best. It's almost schizophrenic. It's almost a dichotomy to do so. But I think that's the proper thing to do. Don't become a hermit and run off to leave civilization.
Where are you going to go? Anyway,
what are you going to do? You're going to, if you think you and your spouse and maybe a couple of kids are going to hold off the world, you're wrong. That's not going to work. It simply isn't going to work. You need to be part of a larger community. That's what we're doing here in my area. The preppers all know each other. We work together. We exchange ideas. We exchange information. We help each other out. One of my prepper buddies just helped me move a couple of pieces of furniture the other day. Another prepper buddy helped me the week before with something else.
What about the people, though, John, that live in places like apartment buildings and such? Okay, I've got a heart for the infirm, the elderly, or the single mom, the widow, with a couple of children. What about them? Go ahead. How can they best be helped?
Unless you're part of an ethnic Vietnamese neighborhood in the city of St. Louis, which has a large ethnic Vietnamese population, 5,000 or 6,000, maybe more. It's difficult for people in that kind of ethnic, more or less self-contained neighborhood to have friends and family that are 100 miles away in the country. With a hobby farm. That's difficult just because of the nature of who they are and where they are. For most people in these cities, however, they're going to have a strong possibility that a relative, somebody they went to school with, somebody they work with, maybe somebody to go to church with, has property in the country, maybe 75, 100 miles away from a city, where during a total collapse, it would be safe, where fruits and vegetables can be grown, where there can be some goats and chickens or dairy cattle, whatever it might be. So it's a matter of networking. I have the same affinity for single moms and older folks that are stuck in these cities. Right. Do not give up hope. Network. Think about who's in your phone book, a relative, somebody you went to school with, a coworker. Somebody you go to church with, do they have a country place? Find out who that person or persons are and see if you can work out some kind of an agreement. What do they need that you can provide? Can you do gardening? Can you do animal husbandry? Can you pull an overnight shift at the radios during a long-term crisis? Carpenter work, plumbing work, painting, electrical work, vehicle maintenance. What do you bring to the table that somebody on a ranch or a farm would find useful that would make them welcome you, other than, well, a lot of cash, for example, or gold, or silver. Of course, the possibility exists. You could buy your way into a safe haven. Of course, that possibility exists. And if that's what you want to do, and it's agreeable to both parties, why not? Go for it. So don't give up hope. Just because you're stuck in a city doesn't mean you can't get out. Do that networking. And if you do networking, I think you'll find an agreeable situation. It may be an RV. Used RVs are not terribly expensive. A place to park that used RV in exchange for labor. That might be, and I've seen people do that. So you need to be creative, Doug. You need to be ready to do things that maybe aren't all that pleasant in order to survive. But look at where you are, what you have to exchange for a safe haven for you and your family. One thing that's always in demand, and it's farms and ranches, is labor, Doug.
That's true.
That never goes away. In normal times, it never goes away. I'm very blessed. I have a young woman who comes and does cleaning one day a week for me. She does a great job, 18 years old. Another young man, also 18, he comes and cuts brush, cuts my grass, does trimming, cuts firewood, and so forth. Anything I ask this young man to do, he's going to do it. And I'm very blessed I have that at a reasonable hourly rate. But that's an issue for all these farmers and ranchers. John, where can I find people that work? Well, good luck. Good luck.
Well,
but they're out there. They're out there. And make yourself valuable. That's the bottom line there, Doug.
They are out there. I'll tell you, it's difficult though to vet people, especially in times like these. You want to make sure that you've got someone that you can trust.
Well, in the vetting, let's talk about the vetting process, because you know I've done this professionally for years and years.
Wait a second. Let's create the scenario where I'm an old guy and I can't do anything. So I want someone to clean my house or tend to my fields. Okay. How do you vet them?
Well, first of all, how do you meet this person to begin with?
Good point.
That's a beginning point. A personal referral from somebody that you know and you trust in the neighborhood, maybe the pastor of your church. Pastors of the churches perform lots of duties. They know lots of people. Pastors of churches know the dependable, reliable young men and women in their church that he would recommend to do yard work or cleaning, for example. So that's the beginning point of finding a dependable young man, or could be older, of course. Older women and older men can do yard work and cleaning as well, carpenter work, plumbing work, electrical work. Get a referral. Now, for example, I needed to find a roofer for my new house here. I sent an email to the president of the local bank. He knows everybody. And he sent me the names and phone numbers of three contractors that he would rely on to do a roof on his home. Personal referrals. That's something that has a lot of value.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
A lot of value.
All right.
The manager of the local hardware store. You think the manager of the local hardware store just might kind of sort of know who's a good electrician, who's a good plumber, who's a good carpenter? Of course the manager of the local hardware store is going to know that. That's a given. Of course he will. So that's how networking is done. You start out with somebody you know personally. We may have talked about this before, Doug. Let's say you find a plumber in your neighborhood that has done two or three jobs for you. He shows up on time. He does great work at a reasonable price. He cleans up after himself. And you need an electrician. Who are you going to talk to? You're going to talk to that plumber. You know, plumbers, electricians, and carpenters, guess what, Doug? They all know each other. You know, that's
true.
Culture.
That's true.
They do.
Yeah.
The automobile mechanics.
Yep.
And the diesel mechanics. They all know each other.
Yep.
I have two or three mechanics I rely on. If I need body work done on my car, I'm going to talk to the reliable mechanic, because guess what? That reliable mechanic is going to know a reliable body shop. Of course he's going to know that.
And you know what, so John, this reminds me of this. I didn't mean to overspeak you, but you know, for 35 years as an investigator in the private sector, working for corporations and Fortune 100 companies, you know, I never advertised in a phone book. I never advertised anywhere. It was all word of mouth.
And same here, Doug.
And so, here. Exactly. And so the value of that, folks, look, I know this sounds like it's kind of way off topic, but I think that the value of knowing who you're dealing with cannot be overstated. My electrician, as you were talking, lives about, Eric could throw a stone in his house. And he knows, of course, he was the one that hooked me up with a plumber, kind of reverse of what you said. But you know what? All of these connections have value. So I would urge everyone to start making these connections now because you're going to need them. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, something that one of the crops that's harvested in my area is timber. And timber, harvesting timber means you're dealing with a company, a man typically who runs a company with maybe two or three or four or five employees, depends on the company. But a man in there cutting timber, if he's honest, will be a man who can provide a nice, really good-sized check to you. If they're dishonest, they're cutting timber and selling it without telling you, it will cost you a lot.
Right.
So in my area, I know who to talk to. Who's the honest timber cutter? And I'll find out within two or three phone calls, I know who the honest timber cutter is and who the dishonest one is. I can find out with two or three phone calls. Drilling wells is another one. All these homes, pretty much all of them, have a well for their domestic water needs. And an honest well driller will be well known within a community. A dishonest one will be equally well known within a community. If you're an outsider coming in, you won't know the difference. They may have a good-looking truck with a sign on the side. They may have an ad in the yellow pages of the phone book. But that doesn't mean they're honest. It doesn't mean that at all.
That's true. And I've seen that.
My next-door neighbor, he was a World War II vet, retired attorney. He hired a contractor to do some concrete flat work. It was all screwed up. It was a total disaster. And I was talking to him. He says, well, John, they had an ad in the newspaper. And I said, so what? An ad in the newspaper? That doesn't mean they know what they're doing. It means they got an ad in the newspaper.
And the biggest ad in the phone book doesn't do it. Do we still have phone books anymore? I mean, but it used to be biggest ad in the phone book.
They're becoming more scarce.
Exactly. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, let's take it to the next step. You want to vet a person doing roofing or plumbing or electrical work or carpentry work. Coming into your home, let's say the girl is going to do cleaning, for example. And this is not a referral from the pastor. You just happen to find somebody who wants this job. Well, first thing you do is do a complete criminal background check. You need to physically take their driver's license in your hand. Don't take their word for it. You take their physical driver's license in your hand. You write down their name. You write down their date of birth. You write down the driver's license number and their address. The three identifiers to locate anybody or locate any record is full legal name, date of birth, and social security number.
Right.
Ask them to provide. If you're an employer, you have a right to ask for the social security number. So ask for that and get it.
I would even go so far as to take the driver's license and copy it. If you've got a copy,
that's handy.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's handy.
Okay. Go ahead.
So many times, if you're computer literate, you can do a criminal background check at the county courthouse without even going to the county courthouse, and perhaps even do a statewide criminal conviction search without even leaving your house.
And you don't need a PI to do this. John, I don't mean over talking, but folks, this is stuff you can do on your own. Okay, if you have to go down to the county courthouse, do that. Take the copy, take the information with you. If you can do it on the internet, which you can, there are portals to city, county, state criminal databases in just about every locale I can think of. I know here.
Pretty much. Yeah. I don't want to make a broad sweeping statement and be wrong, but out of the 50 states, there's a high level of probability at this point that all 50 states have online access to both civil matters and criminal matters.
Yep.
Now, a person could be arrested and not charged, and that won't appear in the criminal records that you have access to at the courthouse or online. That simply won't be there. If they're arrested and charged, then it will be there, regardless of the outcome. Once formal charges have been filed and later dismissed, that will still be there. Civil matters can be just as important as the criminal matters. If there's extensive civil matters, usually involving money, involving this person, you need to know that before you make a decision to hire them. Very important.
Amen.
Now,
yep.
At the federal level, you can do federal, criminal, and civil background check also. You're going to have a membership, I guess you could say, an account with the federal database to be able to do that. I've got one myself, Doug. I'm sure you've got one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty simple matter to get that account set up so you can do these checks. If you don't want to go to that extent, you may want to go ahead and hire an investigator to do that for you. But that's a matter of personal choice.
And
municipal court records are not necessarily in the county database. They probably won't be, as a matter of fact. So it would be good to do a municipal court check also.
I'm glad you said that, because we now, here in Erie County, Pennsylvania, we have the ability to look at municipal court records by county on the internet, which is really, really neat for normal people. And I would urge everyone to look at what access they have. And this is important when you're dealing with people that you don't really know. So, because if you let them in your house, I mean, think about this, you're going to let somebody in your house that you don't know to clean things or to do whatever, whatever work, they'll have access to, oh, I don't know, maybe they can see a safe or see your food storage or whatever. And this is why it's important. Go ahead.
Well, it's incredibly important, and people need to be aware of this. You know, I got in this business in 1973, Doug. I could go into the St. Louis headquarters for one of the three national companies that take care of your credit reports. Yeah, because I had an account there through the state of Missouri. I could walk out with anybody's complete credit record. It could have been John Wayne's credit record, anybody's credit record. Obviously, that's all changed. You can't do that anymore.
You can. They frown upon it, though.
Well, unless you got a subpoena, you can't do that.
Right.
So, so it's changed. What you get now is what's called the header, which involves just the name of the person, their address, and not much else, without a subpoena. Subpoenas are like magic, aren't they, Doug? I mean, it's amazing what you can do with a subpoena.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of grown men cry and a lot of women weep when they got them. But go ahead.
but it's subpoenas and subpoena deuces take them. A subpoena is for a person. A subpoena deuces take them is for records or three-dimensional objects to be presented in court or at the designated time and place, wherever that might be.
That's right. But you know, I'm so glad we went down this road because, again, folks, know who you're dealing with in these times. I think, John, I don't know. I think we might have a kind of a slow roll up. I don't know. Well, let me rephrase that. I don't know how fast this snowball is rolling down the hill. I know it's going pretty fast. I don't know what bumps it's going to hit to get, as it gets bigger and goes faster.
Well, Wilcock holds out great hope for the efforts of the John Durham investigation to get indictments that are really going to mean something and have a great impact. And I have to agree with Wilcock. I believe the John Durham investigation has a strong likelihood of indictments at the very highest levels coming out, a very strong likelihood. I was saying this morning on my show regarding John Durham, this may be the last case of his career before he decides to either write books, become an adjunct professor at a law school, go on speaking tours, whatever. This may be the last case of his professional career before he goes on to something else. It maybe is not quite so intense.
On your screen, yeah. John, and to the watchers on HagmanReport.com and Rumble, is the Breitbart, latest from Breitbart, Durham investigation. Durham, five Hillary Clinton associates are taking the fifth in Russia hoax prosecution. You already got Sussman, the FBI-related individual. But now we're seeing people taking the fifth.
These are witnesses under oath. They're not under indictment.
Right.
That's who these witnesses are. And that's their right under our Constitution. That's their constitutional right to do that. The next step is to take these same people and put them under indictment.
Correct.
And then that's when the negotiations began between the Department of Justice attorneys and the attorneys representing the people who have been indicted to cut a deal. Do you want to go to jail for 20 years or do 6 months at a federal work camp where they've got a golf course and tennis? Your choice.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the way this is. Sadly, that's the way the system
exactly
works.
What happened.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it works. And so if you give us the evidence we need to go to the next level, up the food chain, to the next guy or gal, then you get the 6 months, which is not a federal felony, at a federal work camp with no fence. It has tennis and a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
Your
mm-hmm.
choice.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it's done, Doug. And that's what these men and women are facing. And it's a pretty simple choice. A federal misdemeanor and 6 or 8 months in a work camp with no fence. I've visited people in these places. There's literally no fence.
Yeah.
Literally. Not even a 3-foot chain link fence. There's nothing there. You want to walk away, just walk away.
It has a country club atmosphere versus, and I know you've been to places like I have, to Attica prison. Oh, my gosh. You know, between the – I don't know who's worse, prisoner or guards, but sorry.
The one camp I visited, I had a friend there who had a federal misdemeanor conviction of – he pled guilty on a federal misdemeanor regarding some kind of IRS tax thing. So the camp he was in literally had no fence. I went to visit him once a month. Right across the driveway was Supermax, where they kept John Gotti.
Uh-huh.
Once a month while Gotti was living there, several limousines would show up with really good food, several very attractive women. And John Gotti would spend time with the very attractive women and the great food in the Supermax.
We're talking about the Durham investigation and right now what's on the line. Because, again, this is, to me, this is important, critical. People aren't looking at this, that Russia stuff, you know, yeah, it was a hoax, but it's going to have some consequences, I believe, hopefully now. I do believe, and I'm going to get.
We can't make assumptions, Doug.
Well,
I have great hope that the Durham investigation will change history,
but,
will change what we know, what the public knows or believes about what happened with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and that whole mess. I hold out that hope on one hand. On the other, it may not work. We still have China to deal with. We still have Russia to deal with.
Yeah.
We have inflation. I don't know if I'm ready to call it runaway, but it's obviously record-breaking inflation.
It's not transitory. It's not transitory.
And you were talking to, I assume it was a gentleman we both know. I'm pretty sure I know who it was, but Missouri is the third largest cattle raising state in the nation.
Right.
I'm literally north, south, east, west of me. I'm literally surrounded by cattle ranches, literally, not figuratively.
Yep.
And I had signed up for a half a side of beef with a gentleman I know, a cattle raiser, and unfortunately, there wasn't enough beef to take care of a new customer. His ranch has a list of about 50 or 60 long-term customers. They come first, so there wasn't enough cattle to meet my needs. But I'm okay with that because there's other ranches around.
How is that even possible, brother? I mean, and who do we grab by the scrawny throat and change this? Make them change it. Who's doing this?
Well, at the level it needs to be done, that's where John Durham and his investigation comes in. I've lost a lot of faith in Donald Trump, quite frankly, mainly because of his support in a clot shot. That's a really big deal. It's a massive red flag that I don't know if it can be resolved to where I'll support President Trump again, because his statements supporting the COVID-19 vaccine have resulted in lots of death and injuries to people that didn't need that. But that aside for a moment, getting these people by the hair and rendering justice, that's a matter for the Department of Justice, an honest Department of Justice, which is not the one that Joe Biden controls. But that tiny segment that John Durham is part of, that's the honest part of the Department of Justice.
Why the hell has it been six flipping years? And this is an honest question. You got more decorum than I do. I want to know why. This happened six flipping years ago. And now Durham, who they say, look, I've never seen Durham. I've seen pictures of him. I've seen, but anyway, why 6 years, brother? And is it going to take another six for justice to be meted out, or is this going to look? I want justice now. I really do. Go ahead, but if you got an answer,
well,
great. If not, I don't know.
I've been, the word frustration is a synonym for anger, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I've been frustrated too. I've been angry with the long, long time that the Durham investigation is taking place. What Durham is doing is far more complex than anything I ever did, because of there's so many people involved and so many, literally hundreds of thousands of documents that are involved. Now, I've been involved in legal matters that involved thousands of documents, but not hundreds of thousands of documents. That's a whole different level, where you've got teams of people to review, do document reviews, and write summaries. It's an incredible amount of complexity. I don't like it either, Doug, that it's taking so long on one hand. On the other, let's go back to Durham's reputation. He has a reputation for being a bulldog of an attorney, that when he gets an assignment, he's going to latch on to it and not let go until everything is done precisely the way it needs to be done to reach the desired outcome. And if it takes another several months or a year to reach that desired outcome, I just say go for it. Whatever it takes to make sure all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, that the indictments are coming down, these men and women are spilling their guts to save their precious butts from going to becoming federal convicted felons. That's a pretty big deal. Your life is, you become a convicted federal felon, your life is pretty much over in terms of having any normal life again.
Let me just say this. If you've got a security clearance and you're part of this investigation, on the wrong side of it, that is, or on the side of being investigated, and you have a security clearance, they need to take every single one of the security clearances away, because the people that were from the former regime, I'm talking about the Obama regime, they're making money from their security clearances by going on these different shows, MSNBC and CNBC and others, and really profiting from their connections that they still have with their ongoing security clearances. They need to be taken away, and then justice needs to be meted out to these individuals in a very harsh manner. But, you know, which brings me to this. You got a Hunter Biden laptop. You got Jack Maxey, who was on with Steve Bannon on the War Room. Jack Maxey right now is in Switzerland, undeleting some nearly perhaps 450 gigabytes of information from the Biden laptop from hell. Okay. Now, having said that, all right, you already, I believe he's already recovered some 350 gig. I don't know that to be a fact, but that's kind of where I'm at. So you've got this evidence, this laptop from hell, and this connects to Durham in a kind of twisted sort of way, where you've got the spineless rhinos in Congress wanting to get it read in the congressional record, or wanting to get it submitted in the into Congress. They did, but only in they're only accepting it in paper form, not in digital form. Okay, so you've got this cluster of stuff going on, okay, and everyone is kind of like at the periphery. They're biting at the edges of this huge treasonous piece of crap stuff that happened over the last however many years. Okay, I'm not seeing any Commonwealth or state jewelry being put on these individuals. I'm not seeing anything, brother. Okay, and so you've got, it's not for a lack of evidence, it's for a lack of prosecuting the evidence. And you mentioned Durham, that you've got hope in that. I want to have hope, but I'm also a realist. I'm looking at this, and here we are, or it's going to be 2 years this November, stolen election. No one's been held accountable. Where's Ruby Friedman from Atlanta and her daughter? Where are the hundreds of people that did the drop boxes? Where are the people who are putting up pizza boxes over windows? Where's the justice? And are we so insane that we're going to believe that 2022, and I know I'm getting off on a tangent here, is going to be any different than 2020? What are we, nuts? If we don't go in there and fix it right flipping now, not look, justice delayed is justice denied, all right? And we have to make an example out of these people, in my view. And I don't want to rant because you're gracious with your time, okay? But you know what, brother? I'm getting really fed up with this. Okay, I'm a law and order kind of guy, but you know what? I don't see much law, or I see a whole lot of law, but I don't see a whole lot of order at all. So, to you.
Well, Doug, it's maddening. It's frustrating. I can easily see why a person like yourself would be angry over the what seems to be an inordinate amount of time that Durham's taking. That's you know, I'm okay with it. I don't like it. But I don't see where we got any choice except to be patient, wait for John Durham to start issuing indictments, which is apparently pretty close, and see what happens when these people, these men and women, are arrested. They post bond to get out of jail. An appointment set with their attorney and the Department of Justice attorneys, and that's when the action really starts.
It's
a strong possibility, Doug, that they're already doing that. Already making arrests and working with these people.
There's rumors that some of these people flipped, you know, from the Breitbart article that was put up before, that that in addition to taking the Fifth, some are flipped and some are saying, well, you know what, so-and-so did this. And now we're talking about the Durham investigation related to the Russian disinformation BS that everyone was peddling back in 16 and before and after. So that's what we're talking about. But we also have, and one more thing to add on top of that, and it kind of, if you were to Venn diagram this, there's some overlap here with the Biden laptop, with the Hunter Biden laptop, and the enrichment of Mr. Potato Head, Mr. Marbles, through Hunter, the brilliant magna cum laude, anyway, the brilliant Hunter Biden. Now he's a world acclaimed artist, reportedly. So there's some overlap here. Is it possible we can see the entire system brought down, or is that just a pipe dream? I'm talking about Biden being removed from office by way of impeachment. Not a Donald Trump impeachment where they or a Bill Clinton impeachment. Well, I'm talking about, Nixon type thing.
Articles of impeachment can only originate from the House Judiciary Committee, which is controlled by the Democrats at least till November. If Congress flips, which is highly likely that it will, the new Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee won't be installed until January of 2023. So that possibility exists. Another very strong possibility, Doug, if the people that behind the Democratic Party, they see this coming. Here's what I would do. If I was a Democrat and I saw this coming in November, where Republicans would be running the House Judiciary Committee, I would have Joe Biden resign for health issues after Kamala Harris had resigned for family issues. And Hillary Clinton was already appointed vice president. So what I would do would be to have Kamala resign, Hillary become appointed vice president, and then have President Biden resign. And then Hillary gets what she's wanted for decades. She really wants to be president of the United States.
Doesn't this feel like a Nixon Agnew moment? Okay, those people who are alive, and you were, I know. Because
of course,
yeah, I cut your arm and kind of the rings. Anyway, I'm kidding. Agnew's got to go. Nixon, they wanted Nixon. Agnew had to go. They got rid of Agnew on some BS charge of tax. He was low hanging fruit. I mean,
he was a bagman.
Yeah,
he was literally picking up cash for President Nixon. Literally,
Agnew back in the day. Right. Okay. So. The way this possibly could go is that they could take Kamala out on some criminal charge and have Biden sitting there. They appoint who as vice president? Come on, tell me who would they appoint?
Kind of like,
yeah, there you go. There you go. Hillary.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden impeach Joey Two Scoops and bada bing, bada bang. There you go.
Well, he can just resign in order to help with the national reputation of the United States. The clean, efficient thing to do would be to have Biden resign and have him appointed, have Hillary just step into his shoes.
Or 25th Amendment, the guy. But yeah, the resign would be good. Yeah.
Either are.
So there is some. So you're telling me, and I got to grab onto this like with everything I got, folks. So do you? There's some glimmer of hope, maybe, possibly, but will it be in time? I don't know. I'm not convinced. But go ahead.
Okay, Doug. I advise people to not get consumed with the political matters. The impact you can have is very marginal, if any at all. Certainly, by all means, be aware of the geopolitical matters involving the president and all those related individuals, the vice president, Hillary Clinton, and so forth. By all means, pay attention to it, know what's going on. But your focus needs to be on the more basic stuff: growing your own food, having a source of potable water. Those are all higher priorities than these other matters. They really are.
You're 100% right. We only have a couple of minutes left too, and I apologize for taking your time, but no, you know what? Focus on what you need to do. Every one of you out there, focus on what you need to do. John, people looking for guidance, and I'm talking about practical solutions, can contact you, right? Can consult with you.
I am absolutely. I'm doing one or two private consultations a week at this point, Doug. Absolutely.
Well, you know what? I might have to schedule myself in there. Let's see. Contact John Moore, private consultation, because I do need counseling. Well, you're not that kind of counsel.
But. Okay. Well, we can do that, Doug. Yeah, absolutely. No. We can do that.
And you know what? That would be time and money well spent. Folks, John Moore is the guy. Okay. He's the guy that keeps me sane on Mondays.
Thank you, Doug.
I'm going to thank you. you're the man. You're a professional guy, and you know what you're talking about. I really appreciate you. I really do. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Doug.
All right.
We'll do this next Monday.
Yes, sir. All right, that was John Moore, thelibertyman.com. But folks, hit your knees, pray, prepare, pray, prepare, pray, prepare. God bless. Good night.